trees, aloof from the world below. They are little birds. Go and see the world, get out when it starts to freeze. Fly on, little bird. Life is short, don't waste it.
Ah, it's the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent, and this summer the morning show has been featuring some of Wisconsin's most vibrant musicians. Right now, we're listening to Little Bird from Aaron Krebs' new album, Brighter Days, which she recorded at Rock Garden Studio in the Fox Valley. And this morning, we're finding out what it takes to make a living in the music industry. And Aaron Krebs joins us. She's a jazz musician and music teacher in Northeast Wisconsin. Aaron won Wisconsin Area Music Awards this year for both of those things and for her flute playing. Aaron, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi. Nice to talk to you.
Also joining us, Mark Goldie. He's the owner of Rock Garden Studio in the Fox Valley. He recently won the Best Studio Engineer Producer Award at the 2023 Wisconsin Area Music Industry Awards. Mark, welcome to you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And we invite our audience to join us as well at 1-800-642-1234. Join in by calling with a question or your thoughts on making it in the music business. You can also email us ideas@wpr.org or call 800-642-1234. So, Aaron, this year you worked with Mark in his studio recording your album. What was it like working together?
Well, I've worked with Mark before, so it wasn't too scary. So it wasn't my first rodeo there. But it was so great. He has such an amazing space and, just such amazing gear, and he is also so talented at what he does. So, we felt at home there, and, it was just the perfect spot to do what we wanted to do, because we wanted to create something, where we recorded it, you know, live in the studio. Being a jazz album, we wanted to, you know, we were all recording it live at the same time. So, you know, I was singing, you know, drums are playing, the guitar is playing, the sax is playing, bass is playing, the grand piano, the real mic'd up grand piano is playing all at the same time. For that track that you heard, Little Bird, and a couple of tracks, we did add some percussion later on, just because it was craving that. But from everything else, it was just what happened in that moment is what you get.
Aaron, so you mentioned it wasn't too scary before, and I was curious. A professional jazz musician still gets scared?
Well, you know, I don't record a lot, you know, so that's a whole new beast for me, I guess.
And Mark, what was it like working with Aaron Krebs?
Oh, working with Aaron is great. Doing a live record is a real rarity for me. Most of the time we're layering instruments on top of each other and trying different things. But I say the real musicians can do it live. And Aaron came in. She had everything arranged. She knew what she was doing. She led the band. Basically, all I had to do was sit back and engineer. And those are my favorite records, because you're hearing the final product happen right in front of you instead of trying to, you know, fabricate something.
Sit back and engineer. You make it sound so easy, according to all of our engineers here at Public Radio. So for those that don't know, give us a little idea of what that means and what a day in the studio is like for Mark Goldie.
Well, every day is different. I also do video production. So some days are video days and some are audio, but it's really random. Every project is different. Like I say, the thing we did with Aaron is really rare. It doesn't happen very often. But most of the time it's, you know, layering stuff, or a singer-songwriter might come in and just lay down their thing. And I never know what to expect. And it's always different styles of music, which I love. Even if it was, you know, the style I grew up with, I wouldn't want to do the same thing every day.
What are the challenges that you face in the studio, Mark? What are some of the obstacles that you see you regularly have to overcome?
The biggest obstacle is people getting in their own way. and it's true. You know, people get scared because the red light is on, and they're not performing the way they did when they were practicing at home because of their nerves, you know, and the real pros know how to work around that. But some people really suffer with it, and it becomes emotional. And, you know, I have a whole toolbox of things to try, but, you know, it's just hard to watch someone suffering like that. And that does happen, you know, quite a bit.
Aaron, there's that word scared again. You're a music teacher, and you've been a music teacher for more than a decade in schools and with private lessons, and you actually won an award for it in Northeast Music Teacher of the Year from the Wisconsin Area Music Industry Awards. What does it mean when you talk about overcoming the fear, and how, in your role as a music teacher, do you help with that?
So students, you know, I'm always telling them, you know, just focus on the task at hand, and you know, with your songs, that most people don't know your song, you know, that you're playing. Most people don't know it. Only I know it, and your parents know it, and it's really not very likely that someone else in the audience knows it. So if you do make a mistake, if you just keep going, nobody's really gonna know except for me. And they're like, oh, okay. You know, that's what I tell, you know, my students, and they seem to feel like that's okay. And most, you know, younger students, you know, when they're under, I'd say age 11 or so, they don't really care if they make a mistake. It's when they start to get a little bit older and they really start to care if they make a mistake. But yeah, I used to have a fear of recording, but I don't really have that anymore because I figured out how to overcome it, and that's doing it this way, doing it live, because I'm more comfortable performing live. I used to just be a little bit scared in the studio just because of the idea of it being permanent. But now I feel like if I just do it live, like I'm, you know, at a gig or something, you know, that I don't have to be afraid. So
what would you say are the important qualities of being a music teacher? What qualities are important to imparting the love of music and being able to express yourself to others?
Well, I would say that you have to have, you know, knowledge of the instrument that you're teaching. You know, you gotta be an expert on your music or the instrument you're teaching or your voice or what have you. But also, I think even more than that is you have to be passionate about it. You have to be excited about it. Otherwise, your student, your pupil is not going to pick up on that, you know. So I'm out there performing, and I think kids can, and my students can see that I am passionate about music. And so they kind of can feel that through me. So then, you know, I hope that they can get excited about music too.
Aaron Krebs joining us, jazz musician and music teacher in Northeast Wisconsin. Also, Mark Goldie, the owner of Rock Garden Studio in the Fox Valley. And Mark, you've owned Rock Garden Studio for more than two decades now. You're also a musician and artist in your own right. You made a choice to make a living owning a studio over performing as a musician. What went into that decision?
It wasn't a decision. It just kind of happened. This wasn't the plan. Rock Garden was supposed to be a private studio where I recorded my music, you know, like Prince had, that paid for itself by recording other people. And then, you know, 15, 20 years later, you wake up and you're a small businessman and you have bills to pay and toilets to clean and you haven't played a gig in 10 years.
So how often do you find musicians rely on other sources of income besides, you know, their mainstay?
Well, you know, being a full-time musician is a tough gig, and there's ways to do it. And I know some people who've been very successful at it, but it's tough, you know. But if you can make money somewhere else, that buys you the freedom to do your art the way you want to do it. You know, you kind of call the shots at that point if you don't have to depend on it for money.
Yeah. Mark Goldie from Rock Garden Studio in the Fox Valley. Also joining us, Aaron Krebs, jazz musician and music teacher in Northeast Wisconsin. And you can join us, too, at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.
There's a somebody I'm longing to see. I hope that he turns out to be someone to watch over me.
It's the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and this summer we've been enjoying the songs of Wisconsin as part of our local music series. And this is Someone to Watch Over Me from Aaron Krebs' new album, Brighter Days. It was originally performed by George Gershwin back in the 20s. The album recorded recently at Rock Garden Studio in the Fox Valley. Aaron Krebs joins us, jazz musician and music teacher in Northeast Wisconsin. And Mark Goldie is our guest as well, owner of Rock Garden Studio in the Fox Valley. They're both 2023 Wisconsin Area Music Industry Award winners, and they're making a living doing what they love. What do you want to know from them? Call with a question or comment, 1-800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. And Aaron, how do you balance it all? You perform regularly as a jazz artist. You have performances throughout the summer. And how do you balance regular performances with a schedule that includes teaching lessons to others?
Well, that's a good question. I teach lessons in my students' homes. So that actually allows me more flexibility than maybe if I were doing it in a studio, you know, say like at a music store or at some sort of music studio, because then I can work with the families individually to reschedule things if I need to. So our policy is that I'm flexible with their schedule, and they're flexible with my schedule. And so if I need to reschedule because I have a gig, or they need to reschedule because they're going to be out of town, we make things work. During the summer, things get a little crazy, but, you know, during the school year, my gigs kind of slow down. So then I'm teaching a little bit more than I am in the summertime.
What's the age range for your students, Aaron?
I would say right now my youngest student is 4, and my oldest student is an adult. I'm not sure of her age, but she's retired and she's an adult and she's awesome.
So 4 to retirement, is there any age where you can't pick up or learn the music?
No, I mean, you can pick up whenever. I actually just had someone inquiring about starting piano lessons, just asking about it, just because they want to get their fingers going for arthritis. You know, They're starting to get some arthritis setting in, and their doctor said to keep their fingers moving. So you can start it at any age.
Mark Goldie, from the perspective of the Rock Garden Studio in the Fox Valley, you say you could have, the number of musicians you could have worked with could be in the thousands at this point after 20 years of being in business with the studio. How do you react or respond if a musician ends up disliking what they end up creating in your studio? How do you deal with disappointment?
Well, almost everybody has some degree of that. And I kind of call it the three-quarter slump, where you know everything's going forward, doing great, and about three-quarters of the way into the project, the artist starts to doubt everything they're doing. Mm. And nothing is good enough, and they hate their voice, and they hate their songs, and they hate me, and they hate what it sounds like. And it's this panic attack that I've seen, you know, hundreds and hundreds of times, and I try to explain to them that, you know, they're not alone. Everybody goes through this. And once we get to the other side, they're usually pretty happy and everything's fine. If someone's really unhappy with what they did, I probably just never hear from them again.
Aaron, I'm curious, have you had that experience of being so deep in your own music that wondering if it's any good to anybody else anymore?
Not so far with any of the recordings, just because we do it live. So, you know, there's really no going back. You know, I guess you just do the song once, and if it wasn't good, you just try it again and try another take of it. You know, I guess I've never really tried the whole multi-tracking and layering aspect of recording.
Yeah, and we've talked about this a little bit back and forth now about the recording things live and then recording them track by track or instrument by instrument, take by take. Mark, can you hear the difference when it ends up on tape? Can you feel the difference in the studio? What's the difference as you see it?
Absolutely. You absolutely feel a difference. The thing is, say you lay down a drum track first, which is great, you know, and usually everybody's playing together, but we're just keeping the drums. But then when the bass player and the guitar players play to those drums, the drums don't interact with them. The drums don't care what they're doing. So you're locked into whatever the drums were, where there's more of an ebb and flow when people are actually playing live. So even if we're doing a layered project, I try to get at least, you know, guitar, bass, drums, keyboards in one pass. So at least it has that feel, and then we can layer on top of it. But there are some styles of music like, you know, metal, where it's all about precision, and they kind of have to do one instrument at a time just to get that focused on each part.
Wouldn't necessarily think of metal as a precision music genre, but certainly the you've got 30-second notes in there that you've got to hit as an entire band. Mark Goldie, owner of the Rock Garden Studio in the Fox Valley, also joining us. Aaron Krebs, jazz musician and music teacher in Northeast Wisconsin. And you can join us as well at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Aaron, as mentioned, you recorded your recent album in April at Rock Garden Studio with Mark, and you recorded it live to tape, where you weren't doing different takes, you were just doing it as an entire band in one fell swoop. But still, I'm wondering, how different is singing in front of an audience compared to singing in a studio, even if it is live?
I mean, Mark is there, so I guess there's sort of an audience. And, you know, and you know, sometimes our audiences can be kind of small. Sometimes we do house concerts where there's might be only 15 people in an audience, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some rooms are kind of small. So I guess I didn't really feel, as long as I'm there with my friends or whatever, making music in the moment, I guess I just feel good about it, you know. Mm. So
let's go to your calls.
No difference.
Interesting. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234, where Christina in Glenwood standing by. Good morning, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I know nothing about playing any instruments or reading notes. I bought a harmonica. I want to learn how to play it, especially the green grass of home. I live in a small town, and I'm wondering if you have any advice, suggestions, direction, so that I can reach this goal.
Aaron Krebs, how can Christina learn the green grass of home on her new harmonica?
Well, I'm not a harmonica expert, but I guess it depends on if it's a blues harmonica or if it's a, is it like a regular, like chromatic harmonica?
Well, that is, as I said, I know nothing about them. I'm thinking it's a regular harmonica.
Okay.
I would say if there's a harmonica book that you could get that would maybe teach you the notes and maybe, you know, try to figure out how the song goes by ear and then just kind of figure out how it sounds in your head and then go and try to find it on the harmonica. I mean, that's the only way I would know. Mark, do you know much about harmonicas?
No, but YouTube is our best friend.
Yeah, YouTube is a great idea.
Yeah, it's anything you need to know is out there.
YouTube will find, that'll be a place to start, Christina, and thank you. And as we wrap up here, Aaron, what advice would you have for musicians getting started in their career? What would you say to them?
And to get it started in your career, find out what you are the best at, you know, find your niche is the word for it. You know, find out where you're going to fit in, you know, where you might fit in, you know, for me, that's jazz. Mm-hmm. So, and blues. So I'm kind of running down that path. So, that's what you're going to you're going to find to be the most successful. I feel like if you find, you know, your own, what you're going to be best at, and then just go down that path.
Erin Krebs, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Mark Goldie, thanks to you as well.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Erin Krebs, jazz musician and music teacher in Northeast Wisconsin. Mark Goldie is the owner of Rock Garden Studio in Fox Valley, and both won categories in this year's Wisconsin Area Music Industry Awards. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. And who hasn't dreamed of turning their love of music into a lucrative career? What's it take to make it to the top if you want to rock and roll? We're continuing our summer local music series with a Madison native who's helping other musicians answer those questions and navigate their way through the entertainment industry. What do you want to know about making money through music? Join us, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Madison native Ari Herstand is the CEO and founder of the music business education and artist advocacy company Ari's Take. He's a musician and author. His latest book is How to Make It in the New Music Business. He hosts the New Music Business podcast as well. And Ari, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with myths here. Your book says no one really understands the music business. If that's true, what are the biggest misconceptions you see?
Sure. So, biggest misconception is that either you're a superstar and everybody knows your name, or you're a starving musician. And that's just simply not true. I mean, there's thousands, literally thousands of middle-class musicians out there that you've never heard of that are making very good livings doing what they love, playing music, and even contemporary music, and touring and doing it in the way that makes sense to them.
Where do you find these middle-class musicians?
Well, you find them everywhere. I mean, they are in every genre. You know, they're all pursuing music in a way that makes sense for them specifically. And you know, it's another big misconception is that there isn't just one way to make it in the music industry anymore. You know, a couple decades ago, there were kind of just a few different pathways to success, at least on kind of the contemporary side of music. And now there are 100 different ways to make a career happen in music. Many of them, you know, I talk about in the book, but many of them people just don't even realize, but people are doing it in very creative ways these days.
Tell us a little bit about your experience in the music business and how you ended up being the CEO of your own company and host of your podcast and the author of the book. How did you come up through the music industry?
Sure. So I was a touring singer-songwriter for many years. You know, after I graduated from high school in Madison, I went to school in the Twin Cities. I started my music career there. And, you know, when I went to school, I went to a music industry school there, and they taught me kind of the history of how the industry worked. But at the time, this was around 2005, you know, the internet was exploding. Napster had kind of killed CDs were dying off, and iTunes was just starting, and Facebook was just kind of confined to, you know, colleges, and MySpace was getting going. And so I was starting my music career at a very interesting time where it was kind of the death of the old music business and the beginning of the new music business. And I realized very quickly that when I graduated school and I left school, that everything they taught me was no longer relevant. And I had to kind of figure out everything on my own the hard way just by doing it. And so I started booking shows and just kind of figuring out how to make it work. Fast forward, you know, a few years later, and I was selling out venues in kind of a 5-state region around the Midwest. I was doing national tours. I had songs placed on TV shows and in movies and in commercials. I was charting on iTunes, and people kind of word spread that, you know, people, well, they would ask me, like, how are you doing this? You don't have a manager, you don't have a record label, you don't have a booking agent. Like, how are you doing all this? And I would, you know, I sit down with people and I would get back to everybody, and eventually word spread that if you had questions about the music industry, go ask Ari. I didn't have time to get back to everybody. So I initially launched a blog, called it Ari's Take, and everything that I was learning in real time, I just kind of put up on the blog. And, you know, the blog kind of turned into other writing spots and turned into the book deal. And the book came out and was getting shared, because at the time there really weren't, you know, this is about 10 years ago, there wasn't any information out there for working musicians kind of coming from a musician. All the industry books were written by lawyers, and, you know, the blogs out there were just kind of talking heads in the industry, or companies looking to gain customers. So, you know, I was one of the only musicians sharing what I was learning in real time. And so the book kind of took off. And, you know, then it just kind of grew from there, and it turned into, I have an online academy, and then the podcast, of course. And so it's, I realized that, you know, I don't believe in competition in the music industry. I believe that, a rising tide lifts all ships, and that we're all in this crazy industry together. And so now is my mission to just kind of share the knowledge and information. And that's the reason I actually have the podcast too, is I get to interview the movers and shakers of the industry, and then, you know, do that publicly and share all of their information. I don't like that there were gatekeepers back then that kind of held all the secrets, and we were all just kind of scrambling around trying to figure it out. So I'm just trying to share the information now.
And do you find that new artists have realistic expectations of a career in music?
Well, not at first. I know I didn't. I thought that by 2 years after I released my first album, it was a CD at the time, that I was going to be a superstar. I think, you know, everyone has their idols that they grew up with and their favorite artists, and they envision that as their career. But I think, you know, the expectations that artists and musicians kind of just need to realize is really success cannot be defined for you. And so just because your friends and family don't understand what you're doing, and they say, well, if you're not playing the Super Bowl, then I guess you're not a success. Like, you have to put those people out of your mind. Like, you have to define success for yourself. And the first thing that I tell all musicians the most important thing that any musician can do at any stage of their career, whether they're just getting started, picking up a guitar now, or opening their recording program today, or they've been in the music industry for decades, the most important thing that any musician can do is identify and set goals for themselves, very specific goals, because everyone's intentions and desires are different, and no two musicians function the same way or have the same desires or the same strengths and weaknesses themselves. And so you kind of have to know yourself and see, all right, what makes sense for me? Like, do I want a tour? Okay, that's one kind of pathway. There's some people that have families, they don't want a tour, and that's totally okay. Like I said before, there isn't just one way to make a career happen. So you first have to identify, what kind of career do you want to have? What do you envision for yourself? And then, you know, you set these very specific goals, time-bound goals. You know, in 6 months, I want to do this and this. I want to, you know, sell out the High Noon Saloon in Madison in, you know, 6 months. It's like, okay, is that a realistic goal? Let's set it. And then we reverse engineer any of these goals. And then you can kind of set new ones and reverse engineer those.
So you work your way back from the Super Bowl. That's not where you start.
Exactly.
We're talking about making a music business with Wisconsin native Ari Hurst joining us. He is the CEO and founder of the education and artist advocacy company Ari's Take. He's the host of the New Music Business podcast, and also author of How to Make It in the Music Business, which is now in its third edition and up to date and certainly more thorough than anything we could even scratch the surface of this morning. But with this book now in the third edition, you talk about how to work with the media, and I can't help but ask, what's your advice to musicians on working with journalists?
Yeah, so the most important thing is to remember that most journalists, and honestly the general public, they don't look at music the same way or listen to music the same way that musicians listen to music. And there's a big disconnect between journalists, the general public, and musicians. You know, the thing that musicians really get off to and get super excited about, you know, drum tones in the studio or the various guitar pedal combinations that are going to get just that perfect sound or, you know, that kind of stuff, the general listening public and journalists don't really care as much about or don't really understand. What they care about is the story behind the music. And so musicians need to find the most interesting story behind their song, behind the recordings. And the story is not just, well, I wrote this when I was in a sad place. It's like, no, it's just like, okay, did on your last tour, you get into a major car accident and all the musicians got thrown from the van, and where you were sitting on the side of the road, you had this epiphany that you wanted to write this new song about the open road like this. All right, that's an interesting story. I want to know about that. You know, like when Bon Iver first came out from, of course, you know, Northwest Wisconsin, you know, the story that was came out from them is that Bon Iver wrote his album in the cabin in the northern woods of Wisconsin by himself.
I remember that.
And yeah, and you listen to that, of course, because it was a great story. And you put on that album, and you're like, wow, this sounds like this was written in the northern woods of Wisconsin. and it worked perfectly, and that was the story, that was the lore that got told everywhere, and everybody remembers that. You know, when Taylor Swift first got started, it was like she baked cookies with her mom and went up and down Music Row in Nashville, and that was the initial story. And so you have to find a really interesting story. It may not have anything to do with the music. You know, we're not talking drum tones and guitar pedals here. What is the story behind the song that anyone is going to be able to tell their friends, like, you have to listen to this. It was recorded in the northern woods of Wisconsin. Take a listen. It's so cool. You know,
what about Ari when you get some bad press? Have you ever had bad press in your own music career, and how do you finagle that?
Oh, I have had my fair share of bad press. you know, at a time when I was living in the Twin Cities, I was a fairly popular artist there, and especially on the University of Minnesota campus, I was fairly popular. And so the music editor of the Minnesota Daily had it out for me. He did not care for what I was putting out. And they actually wrote 3 hate pieces on me in the newspaper in one semester. You know, I look at it as a blessing. It's if the most challenging thing for any artist out there is to just get people to pay attention. And, you know, apathy is the worst thing that any musician can experience. It's worse than negativity. And so, sure, it was not fun to have these negative articles written about me. But I knew people were paying attention, and I had become so popular at the time that people just couldn't ignore it and ignore what I was doing. And that's fine. You know, like, I would rather people have an opinion about what I'm doing than just not care.
Our guest, author, musician, podcast host, Ari Herstand. His latest book is How to Make It in the Music Business, now in its 3rd edition, and you can call in with a question or comment, a bad press of your own at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and so you want to be a rock and roll star. What would it take to make it in today's music business? How can you use TikTok or YouTube to go from small town Wisconsin to global stardom? As our guest makes clear, luck has little, if anything, to do with it. Music may be your passion, but making it takes hard work. Madison native Ari Herstand is the CEO and founder of the music business education and artist advocacy company Ari's Take. His latest book in its third edition, How to Make It in the New Music Business. And you can call in with the questions of your own or thoughts on the music business at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Ari, your book lists how musicians can make money outside of a contract with a record label, no booking agent required. You list platforms like TikTok and Patreon, Twitch, even YouTube back in the day. How are revenue streams for musicians different today than in the past?
For sure. So, you know, as of 2022, the global recorded music industry actually made more money than it ever had in the history of the music industry, even in the peak of the CD era. And previously, we all heard about kind of, you know, CDs were where the music industry made the most of its money. And it peaked out in 1999. And then it kind of did a downward spiral as the internet kind of took over and the music industry couldn't figure out how to monetize music anymore. Now, the majority of the music, at least the recorded music, the revenue is being made through streaming. So services like Spotify or Apple Music, that's where the majority of the recorded music revenue is coming from. But it has become quite fragmented, and people are earning from platforms, like you said, Twitch. There's quite a few musicians that are earning revenues from that. The kind of crowdfunding, whereas, like you mentioned, Patreon, that's kind of I look at as crowdfunding 2.0. And it's learning how to kind of monetize your super fans. And so there haven't been those kind of mechanisms as directly in the past like there are today. Now you can kind of reach your fans everywhere through the, you know, various platforms. And not only can you reach them, but you can find ways, and there's mechanisms to kind of monetize this fandom. And so we all kind of know about, you know, merch that you're selling at shows or VIP packages or something like that. But then there are really interesting ways that you can just kind of monetize them more creatively and more directly. And we're seeing that now all the time as well.
What happens? What about when fans listen to an artist's music for free? Does that hurt or help an artist's career as you see it?
Sure. So it's a big point of discussion in the industry right now. So and it kind of defines like what does free mean? And because when you listen on Apple Music or Spotify, for instance, even if you're listening, quote unquote, for free, there's still revenue being generated. And so if you're paying a $10 a month subscription, that $10, you know, gets divvied up amongst the streams on the platform and the artist is getting a bit of it. So there's kind of this, there's a lot of discovery that's happening now, and that is able to happen through streaming services that weren't really happening prior. And so, there aren't as many kind of superstars coming out these days, and that's okay. Actually, that's to me, I prefer that, because there's far more middle class musicians coming out because the playing field has become far more level, and there's a lot more niches throughout that are finding an audience because the streaming services and the algorithms have gotten so good to the listener to identify the kinds of music that each individual listener prefers and likes. It's not about kind of these cultural movements as much anymore. Of course, we have the superstars out there that everybody knows. And, you know, Taylor Swift just had one of the most successful tours of all time. But sure, we're going to have those. But we also, everyone who listens to music on a streaming service is going to have different recommendations, their own personalized radio stations that we've never had before. And what's interesting about radio on streaming services today versus radio, you know, the radio that we're speaking on right now, the terrestrial radio, is that when artists get played on personalized radio on streaming services, even if they're just being discovered, they're actually getting paid for that. Whereas no artist was paid, have ever been paid, and still aren't paid for when their music is played on terrestrial radio. Now, songwriters do, but the artists themselves haven't. And because the record labels and the artists historically, if they looked at radio as kind of just this promotional tool, and then people would go out and buy that CD if they liked what they heard on the radio. So the value proposition has shifted quite a bit now, but there is money being made. And like I said, in 2022 last year, there was more money made in the music industry than ever before.
We're talking with podcaster, educator, and musician Ari Herstand, founder and CEO of his music business company, Ari's Take. And you can join us at 1-800-642-1234, where Rayleigh is standing by from Waukesha. Good morning, Rayleigh.
Hi, Ari. Thank you for having me on. Thank you for having me. I'm a local artist from the Milwaukee area, and I believe in not only growing as a musician, but supporting each other as a music community to grow and possibly putting us on the map. Like, I like to host a lot of touring bands so that, like, artists from New York can come to, like, Milwaukee, and I'll treat them good. I'll give them an audience. I'll make sure they get paid. So then I go back to New York and tell all the other artists, like, hey, I just had this great experience in Wisconsin. We got paid. We had an audience. Nobody ever heard of us before, but it was great. And then by that way, we can put ourselves on the map and possibly grow to be the next Seattle, or so they don't have to travel to like New York or LA to try to make it big. Pretty soon, sure, artists would be coming here instead of going there.
Mm-hmm. Well, right on, Rayleigh. And I agree. You know, I think the most important thing that you can do is to support your local music community. And so I love to hear that you support touring artists. And anyone listening to this, you know, touring artists, most of the time when they're coming through and playing clubs and stuff like that, you know, they're not superstars, and they would like a place to stay or a hot meal or a home cooked meal or even just someone to show them around the community. And so that's great. Always treat your touring musicians kindly like that. And I love that. And I love that you're spreading the word. But I also think that we should be supporting our local music communities and the local musicians as well. And so I say the most important thing that you can do is go out and see a local show, you know, tonight, Thursday night, go out, open that, you know, that weekly newspaper. If you're in Madison, it's the Isthmus, you know, the Shepherd Express, whatever it is, yep, and see what's happening tonight. Go to see a local musician play and support your local music community.
Ari, with the minute that we have left, what does it even mean when you hear somebody making it in the music business? What does it mean to make it these days?
Making it is simply making a living, supporting the kind of lifestyle that you'd like to live, doing what you love.
That makes it sound very simple, and yet it seems complicated and for many even out of reach. And so where does it start? In order to get to that goal, you set your goals and work your way backward. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And you know, and like I said before, you know, making it is going to be personalized and different for everyone listening to this. That's how I define making it. That's how I define success. And so I think it's really identifying the kind of life that you'd like to live, the kind of career that you'd like to have, and moving in that direction. It is complicated. It's a very challenging industry. But we should be so fortunate to pursue something that we love and make a living doing it.
I appreciate that. Ari Herstand, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Ari Herstand is Madison native and CEO and founder of the music education business and artist advocacy company, Ari's Take. His latest book is How to Make It in the New Music Business, 3rd edition. I'm Lee Rayburn. You're listening to The Morning Show and David Bowie on the Ideas Network.
Fall in love, all right, as a rock and roll star.